He'll be here, she told herself, right on the tick. Gazing out from the three-story high roof, Holly could see the other buildings of the village, low and gleaming white in the sunlight. The long slash of the solar window overhead was too bright to look at for more than a momentary glimpse. Even so, the after-image of its glare burned in her eyes. Everything is going well, Holly thought. The habitat is functioning smoothly, everybody doing their jobs as they should. Some trouble with one of the solar mirrors a few days ago, but the maintenance crew went out in spacesuits and fixed it. Now it was swiveling properly again, keeping sunlight streaming through the long windows while the habitat rotated along its axis. We need sunshine, Holly thought. No matter where we go, no matter how far from Earth we travel, human beings need sunshine. It's more than simple biology, more than the need for green plants at the foundation of the food chain. Sunlight makes us happy, drives away depression. It must be awful back Earthside when they have clouds and storms, and they don't see the sun for days and days. No wonder the Flatlanders are a little crazy. She glanced at her wrist again. He'll be here, she told herself. He's always on time. Why does he want to see me up here, though? Just the two of us. She felt a nervous thrill race through her. Just the two of us. Maybe he feels about me the way I feel about him. Maybe just a little, but...
There you are.
She whirled and focused her attention on Eberly, who was walking slowly across the rooftop's slightly rubbery surface toward her. He really is handsome, she saw, so full of energy. But he ought to dress better, Holly thought, scrutinizing the baggy gray slacks and darker, shapeless tunic that hung a size or two too big from his shoulders. I wanted to have a word with you outside the office, he said as he stopped an arm's length from her. Sure, Malcolm. She had to make a conscious effort to keep her hands from fidgeting. There are too many listening ears down there, he went on, and what I have to say is for you only.
What is it? She asked, trembling.
He looked over his shoulder, as if expecting to find someone hiding behind him. Turning back to Holly, he said, I see from your reports that you are ready to launch the naming contests.
Business, Holly realized, crestfallen. He wants to talk about business.
You are ready, aren't you? He asked, oblivious to her letdown.
Right, she said, thinking nothing but business. I don't really mean a thing to him.
You've set up the rules for each contest?
Holly nodded. It was pretty easy, for real. And I think that using a lottery to pick the committees for judging each individual contest is the best way to go.
I agree, Eberly said. You've done a fine job.
Thanks, Malcolm, she said glumly.
I'll have to get Wilmot's approval, and then we can launch the contests. I should be able to make the announcement within a few days.
Fine.
His face grew serious. But there is something else, Holly.
What is it?
He drew in a breath. I don't want you to think of this as a reprimand.
Reprimand?
A pang of alarm raced through her. What did I do? He touched her shoulder with one extended finger. Don't be frightened. This is not a reprimand.
But what?
You and I have been working together for several months now, and in general, your work has been excellent. She could see there was bad news coming. She tried not to cringe or let her fear show in her expression. However, there is one thing.
What is it, Malcolm? Tell me and I'll fix it.
The corners of his lips curled upward slightly. Holly, I don't mind you addressing me by my given name when we're alone. He said softly, but when we are with other people, that is altogether too familiar. You should call me Dr. Eberly.
Oh.
Holly knew from Eberly's dossier that his doctorate was honorary, awarded by a minor web-based college that sold courses on languages and public speaking. When I introduced you to Colonel Kananga a few days ago, he went on, it was altogether improper for you to address me by my first name.
I'm sorry, she said in a small voice. I didn't realize. He patted her shoulder in a fatherly manner.
I know. I understand. It really isn't all that important, except that for persons such as Kananga and Morgenthau and such, respect is very essential.
I didn't mean to be disrespectful now. I mean, Dr. Eberle.
You can continue to call me Malcolm when we're alone, but when there is a third person present, it would be better if you observed the formalities.
Sure, Holly said. No prob.
Good. Now, we'd both better be getting back to work.
He turned and started for the door that led back inside the building. Holly scampered after him. About Dr. Cardenas, she said.
Yes.
Without turning or slowing his pace. She's agreed to work under our guidelines. She'll be joining us at our closest approach to Ceres. It's all set.
Good, Eberle said, unsmiling. Now we need to draw up the guidelines that will regulate her work.
We'll need to get Professor Wilmot's approval for that, won't we?
He grimaced. Yes, we will. Unless...
Holly waited for him to finish the thought. Instead, Eberle yanked open the door and started down the metal stairs toward his office.
2 days later, Eberle sat behind his bare desk, studying the face of Hal Janssen, head of the Habitat's engineering department. Ruth Morgenthau sat beside Janssen, looking worried. She wore one of her colorful tunics and enough jewelry, Eberle thought, to tilt the entire Habitat in her direction. She's paying absolutely no attention to the dress codes, he said to himself. She's flaunting her independence, making me look like a fool. But he kept the distaste off his face as he watched Janssen. The man doesn't look like an engineer, Eberle thought. Janssen was one of those pale blonde Norsemen. Even his eyelashes were so light that they were practically invisible. He had a clean, pink, well-scrubbed look. And instead of the engineer's coveralls that Eberle had expected, Janssen wore a crisply starched old-fashioned shirt with an open collar and neatly creased chocolate-brown trousers. The only clue to his profession that Eberle could see was the square, black, palm-sized digital information processor that rested on his thigh, balanced there precariously. Janssen touched it every now and then with the fingers of his left hand as though to reassure himself that it was still there. Nanotechnology is a two-edged sword, he was saying, somewhat pompously, Eberle thought. It can be used for a tremendous variety of purposes, but it also poses grave dangers. The gray goo problem, Morgenthau murmured. Janssen nodded. His face was square-cut, stolid. Eberle decided that the man had very little imagination. He was a walking bundle of facts and information, but beyond his technical expertise he had no interests, no knowledge, no ambitions. Good, Eberle said to himself. Gray goo is one thing, Janssen replied. Nanobugs have also been deliberately programmed to destroy proteins, take them apart, molecule by molecule. So I've been told, said Eberle. We're made of proteins. Nanobugs can be designed to be killers. That's a great danger in a closed ecology like this habitat. They could wipe out everybody in less than a day. Morgenthau gasped, disbelieving. No, less than a day? Janssen shrugged his slim shoulders. They can reproduce themselves out of the materials around them in milliseconds and multiply faster than plague microbes. That's why they're usually programmed to be defunctioned by near UV. Defunctioned? Asked Eberle. Near UV? Morgenthau inquired. Defunctioned, deactivated, broken up, killed, stopped. Near ultraviolet light is softer, or not so energetic, as ultraviolet light of shorter wavelength. So you can use near UV to stop nanobugs without causing damage to people. He broke into a toothy grin as he added, except maybe they get a suntan. Eberle steepled his fingers. So nanomachines can be controlled. If you're very careful, Janssen replied. But the risks are frightening, Morgenthau said. Janssen shrugged again. Perhaps. But take the EVA we had to do on the solar mirrors a few days ago. Nanomachines could have been inserted into the mirror motors and repaired them without anyone needing to go outside. Then they could be very useful, said Eberle. They'd be extremely helpful in all the maintenance.